ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Global roaming. We did try to stay weekly. The news said no. So 5 days a week it is. I'm Hamish McDonald.
I'm Geraldine Doogue, and now joined by esteemed colleagues Latika Burke and Kylie Morris. Search for Global Roaming on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am right now at the beach, the world's windiest beach. There is sand beneath my toes, there's waves crashing against the shoreline, and I've just sat down with a paper package. Now, what could possibly be in this package? As I unroll it, I want you to imagine a pile of fresh, hot chips, French fries, whatever you want to call them. The point is that they have the perfect amount of chicken salt. So why am I making you live through this moment? Well, what if the reason we can have this moment can actually be traced back to a French queen, a woman who famously lost her head, Marie Antoinette?
She's got this sort of humble potato flower decorating what is the height of fashion.
This is a global adventure that's about to take you from the jungles of the Americas.
We've got them growing up in the freezing cold of the Andes and then down, you know, in tropical areas as well.
Through empires.
That, of course, then allowed the Spanish to build up untold riches.
Revolutions.
Bread prices rise. And, of course, that affects the poorest.
Inside a Prussian prison.
And he's like, you know what? For having been in prison and eating only one food, I'm feeling pretty good.
At a particularly unusual dinner party where Marie Antoinette helped give the world French fries.
He was obviously hobnobbing with the great and the good.
My name is Mark Fennell, and throughout history, there have been invisible turning points that change the way we live, including the way we eat. This is one of our favourite stories from the first year of the show, the strange story of the potato and how it went from rags to riches, all thanks to a royal endorsement from a French queen, and no one saw it coming. If you go to a restaurant and you open up a menu, certainly in the West, you would be hard-pressed to not find a potato dish somewhere. Like, it's roasted, it's mashed, it's gratined. But the thing is, it was not always that way. If you went back roughly to the days of Shakespeare, 15, 1600s, you would have seen potatoes very differently.
Well, they would have been incredibly new to you. So until about... Well, until about Shakespeare was alive, potatoes hadn't been seen in Europe because they were native to the Americas. And so if you were encountering a potato...
Such a weird way of putting it, but I love it. Go with it.
You might think that it was a very, very strange food indeed. It was unlike anything that you'd probably ever seen before.
So this is food historian Dr. Lauren Samuelson. And believe it or not, when potatoes first started appearing, particularly in Western Europe, they had a spectacularly bad rap.
Yeah. So there's a few myths that are getting around at this time. So we've got the idea that potatoes can cause leprosy. And that's really because at the time, medicine sort of thought that something that was causing a disease or could cure a disease often looked like the disease that it was causing. And you sort of think about these white potatoes, they're sort of knobbly and misshapen, and that reminded people of leprosy-infected limbs and fingers and things. So they thought that potatoes could cause leprosy.
I mean, it's been a while since I've seen a leprosy-riddled finger, but now I've got a really clear image in my head. So if people think it causes leprosy, what else?
There was also the thought that potentially the potato was poisonous, which, you know, is pretty on the ball because a raw potato can definitely cause you some pretty bad stomach upsets, and the leaves are really poisonous. But it sort of came from the fact that a potato is a member of the nightshade family, so like tomatoes and chilies as well. But really, Europeans had only seen nightshades in the form of, say, belladonna, you know, deadly nightshade.
Yeah.
And so, of course, when these plants look kind of similar and are in the same family, the question of whether it's poisonous will come up.
There's also an economic component to this as well, isn't there? So who is eating them and who isn't eating them?
So primarily at the very beginning, it would have only been the very poorest of people who were eating potatoes. They weren't a cash crop or anything to begin with. It was likely that people were just growing them in their gardens as sustenance for themselves. They were often used as animal feed and things like that too.
And there's also a religious component to this as well, right? Because it was considered not of God. Talk me through this.
Yes. So the idea was some clergymen were preaching that because the potato hadn't appeared in the Bible, that it was not designed for human consumption by God. And so, thusly, they should not be eaten.
And the relationship between potatoes and religion is interesting, right? Because it was also like linked to Catholicism as well.
Yeah, because, of course, the Spanish were the first to introduce the potatoes. And, of course, the Spanish were Catholic. And so it sort of became linked that potatoes were the food of the Catholics because the Italians took them up pretty quickly and eventually the French. And, of course, they sort of got tarnished with the papal brush, I guess.
Okay, so you mentioned the Spanish there. They are the vector for bringing this Catholic leprosy finger to Europe. But where does the story of potatoes begin?
So potatoes, like I said, are native to the Americas. They started to be, I guess, domesticated, bred into edible foods by Native American peoples around 8 to 12,000 years ago. They were grown all the way from the south of Chile up to the Rocky Mountains in what is now Utah.
Oh, wow. So this is actually quite really, a big chunk of the Americas.
Deep. Yeah. And it was one of their staple crops along with maize. You know, it was one of these things that they really relied on. The first Europeans that probably came into contact with the potato were probably Francisco Pizarro and his conquistadors in what is now Peru in around the 1530s as they were sort of coming in to conquer the Incan Empire. They don't really write about it, but there's other Spanish people at the time that start writing about these foods that they came into contact with that reminded them of truffles, but didn't taste as good.
It's so weird that the reference point for potatoes is truffles.
Yeah. But well, they're called like, in lots of European languages, they're like sort of based on truffle. Like
right.
That's how they conceptualized it, I guess, because you dig them up.
And so when the Spanish enter, you know, what is now South America, and they are seeing the native people there eating these potatoes, what do they think of it?
The Spanish weren't in South America for food. They were there for gold. And so what they actually started doing was essentially enslaving people. First of all, the native populations of around about Peru and Bolivia. There were lots of silver mines there. And once they were sort of herding for workers, they started to actually bring in enslaved Africans to mine as well. And they fed them potatoes. So that was the food of their workforce, their enslaved workforce. And that, of course, then allowed the Spanish to build up, you know, untold riches, really, and really fueled their imperial ambitions around the world.
So already potatoes are fueling and funding one empire, the Spanish Empire.
100%, yeah. They wouldn't have been able to extract as much of these resources out of these countries without the potatoes. So I think that it really was essential to what they were doing in South America.
It's through the Spanish that the potatoes make the journey from the Americas into Europe. But even though it does start spreading across the continent pretty quickly, the take-up itself is, well, it's quite sporadic.
Yeah, potato eating was taken up in sort of patches. So the Irish took it up because potatoes grew really well there, but also they were sort of forced to in a way. But there were other places where, you know, little enclaves of people were perhaps eating potatoes, but they definitely weren't like large scale crops. These are maybe a community might have a potato patch. They weren't a staple food. The staple food across Europe at this point in time is bread.
So this is a food that is not of God, cheap, fed to animals in some parts of Europe, eaten by the poor in other parts. This is a food that has a PR problem. And then somebody very important enters the story. Antoine Augustin Parmentier. How's my French?
As good as mine.
Apologies to all the French listeners. So this person is a vitally important person in the history of potatoes and a key character
on our journey to Marie Antoinette and French fries. So who is Antoine Augustin?
He is a French pharmacist. And he was a pharmacist in the French army during the Seven Years' War. He was fighting along with the army. Well, I don't know how much fighting he was doing. But at any rate, he was captured by the Prussians and was kept as a prisoner of war for several years. Now, Prussians were some people that were eating potatoes, usually to feed groups of people like armies and prisoners, right? They weren't considered good food, but they were food. So Parmentier is in prison for several years, and all he ate was potatoes. That was all he was fed. At the end of the war, he's released and he gets out of prison and he's like, you know what? For having been in prison and eating only one food, I'm feeling pretty good. So he, as a man of science, he went back to Paris and he started to investigate what made this food good. And he became like the potatoes' number one fan. He started writing essays about the potato and how good it was. And at this point in time in France, you know, we're sort of in the lead up to the French Revolution. So there's all sorts of things going on. But one of those things is that people are upset about the price of bread.
Oh, that carb's too expensive. Give me another one.
Yeah. So Parmentier sort of got involved in pushing the potato as an alternative for bread.
He's the potato PR agent.
Yeah.
So how does he go about doing that?
He does a lot of different things. He does lots of intellectual things, like writing essays and all of that good stuff. But then
Said like a proper academic, hold on.
But then he also, apparently on the advice of Benjamin Franklin, the American statesman who was over in France as an ambassador, apparently on his advice, started to throw these potato parties where he would invite all of his mates. And he's pretty well connected, Parmentier. Like, he's hobnobbing with, you know, some of the rich and powerful. And essentially at these parties, everything that he would serve would be based around a potato. So from the soup to the dessert, and he was even serving potato vodka, which I'm sure was a bit blasphemous in France.
I was going to say. He definitely picked that up in Prussia.
Yeah. And so he started to sort of convince all of these sort of intellectuals that he was friends with that the potato wasn't going to kill you and could actually taste pretty good.
So this is pre-revolution, which means if you want to make something popular, you put it in front of nobility and indeed royalty.
Indeed. If you want to get something to be popular in France at this point in time, you need to get Louis the 16th on board and his wife, Marie Antoinette, as well.
And that's how we get to Marie Antoinette. Now, what is the role that Marie Antoinette plays with potatoes?
The story goes.
Excellent caveat. I love it.
That Parmentier, in one of his amazing potato parties, somehow swings it that the king and queen would come to one of these events. When they got there, he presented them with a bouquet of potato flowers. And apparently they were so enchanted, they loved it so much, that Louis put potato flowers in his lapel and Marie Antoinette decorated her hair with potato flowers.
What do potato flowers look like?
They're really quite sweet.
Are they? Yeah. Okay, 'cause I've never, before we were talking about this as like the food of leprosy, I'd never considered that the flowers might be quite pretty.
Yeah, they're sort of like these tiny little sort of shades of purple, bright yellow center. They sort of grow in like bunches. They're quite pretty, but
okay.
You can sort of imagine Marie Antoinette with one of her enormous wigs, and then she's got this sort of humble potato flower decorating, you know, what is the height of fashion.
It's so funny because for better or worse, Marie Antoinette will always be remembered for this one phrase, let them eat cake, right, which was apparently directed at peasants who couldn't even afford bread to eat. Now, the quote itself has no historical evidence, but she does live in the popular consciousness as this rich person who does not care about the poor people of France, rightly or wrongly. So I guess what I'm thinking here is Marie Antoinette doing this because she thinks it's just fashionable, or is she doing this because she thinks it is a worthwhile mission to introduce a more affordable carbohydrate to the French people? Like, do we know? Will we ever know?
I don't know that we will ever know, but we do know that the king did grant Parmentier some land on which to start growing potatoes. So, you know, it seems likely that at least the king saw some value in perhaps diversifying the carbohydrates of the French people and having options there.
As fun as it is to draw this connection to Marie Antoinette, there is something really serious going on here at France at the time, isn't there, Lauren? Because they have this stunningly large number of famines over this period. And I think that that price of bread, that illuminates a bigger issue that's facing the French at this particular moment in history, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely does. So pretty much at any point in time throughout the 1700s, France and lots of European countries are one bad year away from famine, because they are so reliant on wheat as their staple crop, especially from about the 1750s. You know, there's numerous of these sort of bad years, bread prices rise. And of course, that affects the poorest to begin with. And, you know, one of the reasons that people started the French Revolution was their inability to access bread.
So just connect the dots for me, right? Because the fact that Parmentier is flogging potatoes to the rich and wealthy, suddenly Marie Antoinette's potentially wearing potato flowers in her hair. He's managed to convince the king to have this plot of land to kind of grow it. Is it working in terms of changing the perception of potatoes throughout France and the rest of Europe?
Yeah, it absolutely does. While Parmentier is the sort of the big name in this sort of potato evangelism, there were lots of people at this point in time who were seeing the value in having a diversity of crops to help countries to avoid these famines that were happening. So we've got Parmentier, but then in other countries, so before I was talking about Prussia, Frederick I of Prussia was also a bit of a potato evangelist. Mm. Catherine the Great tried to get Russians to take up potatoes. I think she encountered a bit of pushback.
Catherine the Great encountered pushback.
Unheard of. And we've got other Enlightenment thinkers as well. So this is the time of the Enlightenment. Those same Enlightenment thinkers that really ended up overturning the French throne were thinking about how nations, how states could become more stable and more powerful and more profitable. So we've got people like Adam Smith, who wrote The Wealth of Nations. And in there, you know, he's talking about how in order for states to become, I guess, capitalist powerhouses, you needed to have a happy and healthy workforce. And for him, the potato was the way that you could have a happy and healthy workforce. I think he said the most powerful men and most beautiful women eat potatoes.
Fair enough. So we know the origin of the potato. We know where Marie Antoinette fits within this. The last part of our opening gambit was the French fries. You promised me French fries, Lauren. So and this is the part where I'm just going to get out in front of this and say that this is a hotly contested part of the equation. Hotly contested. But what is the way in which Marie Antoinette connects me to the modern French fries?
So the story goes that French fries, which you can't imagine American food without French fries.
No.
Right?
No.
Apparently, it was US President Thomas Jefferson who introduced them to America. In 1802, once he became president, he threw a party at the White House and served French fried potatoes. There's actually like some merit to this story, because during the time that Jefferson was in Paris.
Sorry, because he was in France before he became president, yeah.
Yeah.
So I've seen Hamilton, I know.
Exactly. So he was in France. He was a massive Francophile. And so while he was over there, you know, he was obviously hobnobbing with the great and the good. And he almost certainly could have been at one of Parmentier's parties. And we know that he took his enslaved chef over to France with him to learn how to cook French food, because Jefferson loved French food. At this point in time, deep frying was becoming a real art in France. It was a new cooking technique. And so you can sort of connect the dots here that someone's decided to find out what happens if you put potatoes in boiling hot oil. And perhaps that person was Parmentier, and perhaps Jefferson encountered French fries at one of his parties and his cook learned how to make them while in France.
So as amazing as potatoes are at changing the world, especially when they hit Europe, there is this hidden flaw in them that we need to talk about. So potatoes I think more than any other food is associated with one country, which of course is Ireland. And I think it's important to talk about how that comes to be, right? And what happens when potatoes become so central to the Irish identity.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about empire in Spain. Well, this is a British empire situation. So as the British started their imperial expansion in Ireland, essentially what they were doing was taking the good arable land that was really great for growing things like wheat, but also grazing cattle and sheep. And as they were doing that, they were moving Irish people off that land into essentially what was less arable land, less good for farming, in sort of the western bit of the country. What did grow really well there were potatoes.
Mm.
And so essentially because of this sort of, imperial expansion of Britain, in growing these crops and things. And of course those crops weren't for the Irish people. They were being sent back to London and being traded out across the rest of the world. The Irish started to really rely on potatoes and it became the main part of their diet. Irish workers, men, it was said that they would eat anywhere between 10 to 12 pounds of potatoes a day, which is 4 to 6 kilos. It's a lot of potatoes. So you can see when you've got a large portion of the population reliant on one food that things could go pretty badly wrong.
And they do go badly, don't they?
Yeah. What Parmentier and his potato evangelist friends didn't understand when they were sort of spreading the potato was that because the potato is grown differently from other crops, essentially there's no seeds. You just take potatoes from the previous year and replant them. So they're all clones of each other. There's no genetic diversity. And once those potatoes spread out across Europe, it was really the world's first like true monoculture, but that makes them really susceptible to disease. What we see in Ireland in the 1840s is what is known as the potato blight. It had actually come from America. The disease had sort of made its way into Europe and it had killed thousands of people there. But because they weren't as reliant on the potato, it wasn't as devastating. When that blight got to Ireland, it decimated the crops and people went hungry. And this sort of thing had happened before. People were used to sort of famine.
Yeah.
What they didn't expect was that it would come back year after year after year. And so as the blight continued, people started to starve. Ireland had seen a population explosion because of potatoes. There were about 8 million people in Ireland in 1845. About a quarter of them either died from malnutrition or emigrated due to the potato famine.
So it was an amazing culinary discovery, but at the same time it kind of had a fatal flaw when it was imported into Europe.
Absolutely. When you become too reliant on one thing, it's a recipe for disaster.
When you look back at the adventure of potatoes from Central America through Spain, throughout France, Europe, Ireland, America, this incredible kind of legacy is left. What do you think the legacy of the potato should be?
I mean, I think that we can all agree that potatoes are pretty fantastic.
Salt.
There's not really a cuisine around the world that doesn't use potatoes and hasn't incorporated it, you know, into their food cultures, which I think just shows how wonderfully versatile it is. But it's also got, it definitely still has a colonial legacy to it. You know, those countries that took up the potato, they stabilised and that allowed them to spread out around the world. And so if you have a look at what people around Asia call potatoes, you can see some of its culinary sort of legacy. You know, in Java, they were called Dutch potatoes. In the Himalayas, they were known as British potatoes.
Hmm.
In Vietnam, they were the French tubers. So you can see that sort of how, I guess, empire spread the potato while the potato was feeding empire, which I think is really, really interesting.
The World According to Potatoes, Dr. Lauren Samuelson, thank you so much.
A pleasure.
This episode was produced by Taryn Priadko and Zoe Ferguson. on Gadigal land in Sydney, Australia for ABC Radio National. I'm Mark Fennell, and thank you so much for listening. No one saw it coming. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review or rate us on whichever podcasting platform you're listening to us on now. I know it sounds a bit desperate, but it is just like one of these weird things that absolutely helps people find the show. So thank you. I'll be back next week with another one of our favourite episodes. We are, of course, in Mardi Gras season, for those of you who celebrate. And next week, you will hear the story of how a riot in 1969 sparked a global movement. That is next week on the show. We'll see you then. Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.